calls in the third hour at 800-313-9443 when we open the phone lines. My guest today is Clint Richardson. He's one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite people. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com and strawmanstory.info. And you may visit this last website to download his recent book. He has produced many, many wonderful, wonderful videos, the first of which was The Corporation Nation. That's how I met Clint. That is how I watched that video back in 2010, and I thought, I have got to talk to this gentleman. His next video was Lethal Injection, the story of vaccination. That was produced in 2011. Then he did Kaffir School, School Districts, and the Lottery. Then Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Privatization in 2013. And his most recent one, which is really, it's really very cleverly done, Vote NOTA, N-O-T-A, for President in 2016. I've watched it a couple of times. It was initially published on September 25th, 2016, then reposted the very next day with some corrections that probably weren't necessary, but Clint is a perfectionist. Clint, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's good to hear from you, and you actually are sounding pretty good yourself.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm trying to get a hold of my whatever I have, whether I'm allergies or whatever. Anyway, I got a new fan, which is great. I know that's not relevant or important, but my last my ceiling fan used to make this horrific noise, and I couldn't have the fan on, and it was like purgatory in my office. So I have a new fan. It's really quiet. Nobody can hear it. So I just, yeah, today's a good day.
Nice.
So this new film, I read all the comments, and I thought it was very clever. I thought it was really clever. And the image of Nota, I mean, you know, there's so much detail, and those horns coming out, and those little earrings on the horn. And
you know what that actually is? I mean, it's real. I did this because, well, you know the saying that you're doing the same thing over and over again is this, and expecting different results is the sign of insanity, right?
Right.
I look back at the Patriot, the Truth Movement, and all this stuff. We're doing the same thing for 40, 50 years. You know, these guys are, all the old school guys are dying out now up in Wisconsin and all that, you know, and I'm like, we've been doing the same damn thing, and you got a whole new generation that's growing up in a digital realm, you know, so that character is actually the character from Warcraft, the movie and the game.
Oh.
So it identifies with the younger crowd. With the older crowd, they're like, oh, I can't. It was kind of funny because it was like an ad hominem attack against the cartoon character. I can't pass this on because you did this in a cartoon character. And I'm like, so you're attacking the messenger but not sending the message?
Yeah.
Tuna's delivering it. And I'm like, you're getting the wrong idea here. The idea is to appeal to a younger crowd that hardly even sees reality anymore. You know,
well, I thought it was really clever. I was just fascinated, and I thought it was just really well done. And the voice, I know it's your voice. I have no idea how you made it sound the way that you did. I thought that was clever. I didn't get tired of listening to it. In fact, I thought, how did he do this? I was just, it's just amazing. I just love it.
Well, it's I used to do that for a living. You know, I was in Hollywood for almost a decade, making voices and doing all that stuff. So it kind of comes like second nature. So that wasn't the hard part. The hard part was the research, trying to figure out how, you know, the more deep level of this is what was hard to figure out, because the real concept behind this is choice. We all think that voting is actually, well, specifically for president, that voting for president causes us to be free and that we have a choice and that, you know, but the truth of the matter is voting is the opposite of choice. And that was one of the hardest things I ever had to finally, grasp. You know, you start thinking in a more, outside the box way and try to look at things as an outsider instead of the, you know, being trapped inside of this whole system. And you figure out, oh my gosh, if I vote, I'm actually giving up my choice. I'm not giving a choice, I'm giving up my choice. And that was the hardest part to figure out.
But you also indicate, too, that by not voting, you are acquiescing to what the rest of the people do, which, and most of the rest of the people are a bunch of, they're ignoramuses.
So that's the problem, is illiteracy. We're in a nation, and that's any nation that speaks English, basically. English is known as dog Latin. It's a very mongrel language. It's based on the Latin system of language, and what we say is generally the opposite of what we intend to say, when it comes to those, you know, that's why we have such a tough time in court and everything. They hear Latin, we're speaking English. So it's called the vulgar language, literally, the common language. And you know, a slave master will never teach his slave the proper language so that the slave could ever figure out how to stop being a slave. You know, it's never going to happen. You have to figure this stuff out yourself. So it basically boils down to, obviously, perspective. You have to take both perspectives all the time. You always have to look at things as the master and as the agent, or the subject, the slave, the employee, and the employer, right? You always have to look at every aspect of every single thing you ever look at from the point of the authority figure and from the point of the one that's dominated. And only then can you really truly understand what's happening. And so when you're talking about the presidential election, I mean, if you look at just a cursory look at the National Archives, who's in charge of the Electoral College, they tell you flat out, hey, you do not vote for president. You, the common people, the national citizens, do not vote for president. What you're doing is you're basically voting yes. Whether you vote or not doesn't matter. You're still voting yes. If I vote Democratic or Republic, I'm voting yes. I'm not voting for a candidate. And people need to get this through their heads right now. You're not voting for a candidate. You're not voting for Trump when you say Trump. You're not voting for Clinton when you say Clinton. You're not voting for Libertarian, whatever his name is. You're voting to legitimize an ancient system that comes from the Roman Empire called the electors. In this case, unofficially, it's called the Electoral College. So when you vote, your vote is nothing but a yes. It doesn't matter, you know, which one you vote for. You're voting yes for the Electoral College, and the Electoral College indirectly votes for, or I should say, elects the elect, which is the president. All right, and that's the most important concept of this whole thing, because, again, this is not a choice. A choice, Deanna, there's only one type of choice that we can really call a choice, and that is either yes, a positive, or a no, a negative, right? But you don't have a choice. You vote for one family member or the other family member. Trump and Hillary are from the same grandmother and the same family, and they go back to the same line of kings of England. You're voting for one part of a whole people. Doesn't matter who you vote for, you're voting yes, which legitimizes the Electoral College, which is completely run and appointed by political parties, and the political party structure, which are private associations that have nothing to do with you whatsoever. They're private.
Right.
They are in charge. They appoint the electors. The electors pledge their vote to their political party, not to us. and they are then required to vote. The whole thing is a complete sham. It's a scam. It's completely put on for show to make you think that you actually have a choice when you don't.
Wow. Now, you also implied, or well, you didn't imply, you said it. The corporations actually dictate who the electors are.
Well, yeah, what's a political party but a corporation, right? A body politic of people. The electors are always high members in those political parties. They're lifelong members, usually high up, and they are chosen or appointed by the political parties. They wait until the popular vote happens, and because everybody votes Democrat or Republican, the majority says, okay, let's, all that means is that the popular vote, which is not counted, it just means that we've confirmed and consented. That's really the definition of consent of the governed is to vote. You've consented to the Electoral College process. Now, I plan on doing a couple more videos, with Nota, explaining why this is so important. And I think we've certainly discussed this before when it comes to the power that the president has, right? You wouldn't want just any common man to be president because, hey, the president, Congress gave the president ultimate power long ago to declare war and emergency and have, you know, all these executive orders that everybody talks about. The president is basically a dictator. The Congress gave up all their power to the president and to the Treasury Secretary long, long, long time ago, so where the president needs no authority whatsoever from Congress to do anything he wants to as long as he's declared an emergency. That's why you have all these declared emergencies, from swine flu to
Zika virus,
terrorism, you know, a war against terrorism. That's not a war against any nation. It's a war against an emergency, which can be anything they want. And the courts have ruled, of course, that emergency is the same as war.
Right.
So it's war powers. Your president is constantly under war powers because every time you declare an emergency, you're basically declaring war. That's why it's so important that we don't get to actually, you know, elect the supreme ruler, which is the president.
Right. Now, you made a comparison between George W. Bush and Al Gore, and Gore won the popular vote by a few notches, and yet Bush was declared the president. And so, I mean, people when they go to the polls, they really think that their vote is going to have some sort of effect. And, I mean, I've always known about the Electoral College, never really understood it, but with your impeccable research, and you just do this with everything that you investigate. Your research is just deep and impeccable and right on. And I just so appreciate that.
Well, thank you. The idea, and this is certainly not an original idea, not my idea. There's been plenty of people who've said this before, and the idea Nota means none of the above. In other words, you're choosing no instead of choosing yes for one candidate or the other, which is not really a choice. Like if I say, well, would you like Satan or one of his demons to be president? Well, let's go with the lesser of two evils, right? Let's go with the lesser of two evils, but we're still saying yes to evil is the point. And so by saying none of the above, you're actually sending a message. And instead of not voting, instead of voting yes, you're saying no. Hell no, I don't want a casino owner who has said that he has Hillary in her pocket, or Hillary, who is involved in so much crime that it's unfathomable. Why would I want either of those people for president? No, none of the above. Thank you very much. Let's have another election.
Right. I hear an echo. Yeah, I agree with you. And, I mean, they both have so much baggage. And they're both, I mean, like the staged, I watched the debates on Monday. And that was so staged. I understand, and there's been evidence that that she got the the debate questions a week in advance, and then people are going to hate her, and so they'll go to Trump, and then you think, well, wait, he's not really a good candidate either.
Well, yeah, you gotta stop thinking that way. I mean, really, it's like watching a puppet show. I mean, you're literally watching over here on the left arm is Hillary Clinton, over here on the right arm is Donald Trump. Look, they're fighting, honest. Oh, don't look at the arms because the arms attach to the same damn body.
Yes.
No, just watch the puppets, just watch the hands, just watch the delusion, right?
Right.
I think it's so ridiculous when you think about it. When you start applying a little bit of reason and a little bit more of the spiritual type of thought that isn't bound by all of these rules and regulations of man's law, you start thinking about it in those kind of terms, where what is really happening here outside of the spectrum of language, outside of the spectrum of law and all that stuff, what's really happening is that we're watching a puppet show and we're saying, yes, I want that puppet or that puppet. Never mind that they're on the same body, they're the same body politic that's been running things since the early days of the Roman Empire. Never mind that that's the case. I want puppet A because he dresses better, because his hair is better, because it's a woman, because it's a man, because it's black, because it's white.
Right.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, and that's why in this video I make fun of people.
I love that.
I make fun of people, though. I'm making fun of myself. I always thought voting for president was the real deal. I thought, hey, my vote, you know, why am I doing? Why in the hell would I vote for president once my vote actually counted? How could I have imagined that the whole thing was just for show, just to bring you out every 4 years to participate and get you to re-consent to the whole corrupt, organized crime system? And that's what it is. That's what the political party system is. It is insurance that the same rulers of the same bloodline keep ruling. It's organized crime and nothing else. If you're a member of a political party, you're a member of organized crime. It's that simple.
Wow. And I don't know why more people... Oh, we're coming into a break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And to download his book, please visit strawmanstory.info. And, okay, Nancy in California has a quick quote that she would like to share. So let's take Nancy, and then we'll get back to our discussion. Nancy.
I was listening to Eustace Mullins, and he quoted a French philosopher with the last name of Proudhon, Pierre-Philippe Proudhon, who said that all government is crime.
That's the famous anarchist, right?
Yes, you are so knowledgeable, Clint. I'm impressed, yes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Well, that's all I have to add. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, with that, we can just end the show, right?
I mean, no.
That's about it.
You're not getting off that easy.
Well, I like to further that and actually invite people to go up, look up certain terms, because you have to understand the word, you know, people actually don't believe me when I say this. I'm like, this is not my opinion. This is actually what it says in all the legal dictionaries. This is the opinion of the court, not me. Conspiracy is another word for confederation. Confederation is another word for a combination. And all it really means is a plan between two or more people.
Right.
So the concept of government being crime or organized crime, it can really be nothing else, because the purpose of a conspiracy is literally to, specifically when you're talking about a conspiracy, is to a plan between two or more people to injure, right? When we say the word injure, it's two words, to put into law or to force somebody to be under the law. So in and jure. Jure means of right or of law. So when I create a nation, I'm creating basically a place to store all my goyim, to put all my voluntary subjects, my voluntary slaves. I'm literally causing people to take a citizenship, which is a franchise, a corporate agency, basically, like an employee or a member, and come into law, be under my law. So I have literally, created a corporation nation, to ensure, to get people to come into it and be under my law. That's really all a conspiracy is. And so while we're out here always searching for conspiracies, we can't figure out why this crime is so rampant in government. It's like the caller said, it is crime. Government is crime. That's what government is. It's not this romantic, patriotic thing that people think it is. It is specifically for a select group of people, which we call, by the way, the elect. Another word for elect is elite. That's the synonym. Or upper class, and the opposite or the antonym of that is lower class, which is us. The voter is the opposite of the elector, right? So you're creating a corporate body to control the lower class, to ensure the lower class, put them under your law, to control them so they don't get out of hand. That's what government is. I'm sorry, that's what a confederation or a combination is. They're the same words. Look them up. Don't just trust. Don't trust Nota. Just look up the words. It's right there. You see, that's the beauty of just constantly looking at language and the difference between the common language, the voting language, the franchise language, the dog Latin, and the higher language, which is what they call it, the higher language or the king's language, because it's, as Manly P. Hall actually said it best, he said the common people speak in prose or more literal, and the gods speak in verse.
Wow.
Well, what's the Bible written in? What is most of the most famous literature from Dante to whatever, what's it written in? It's written in verse. Why don't the common people like it? Well, because they can only speak in prose. They're not gods. They don't communicate on that level of that higher language because we're not taught that. We're taught to be public-minded. We go to public school. We only know public things, and we have no idea, obviously, with Facebook and everything else, we have no idea how to be private individuals. If we did, there'd be no use for government because we'd all be following the natural law and everybody would be happy and hunky-dory.
Exactly, yes. And I really do hope that people will watch your first film, The Corporation Nation, because it, and people may do that at thecorporationnation.com, because it really gives people an understanding that our nation isn't really a nation, it is a corporation, and that the president is the CEO of the corporation. And so when you're talking about electing or elections, oh, okay, we have a break. We'll be right back. All right. Excuse me. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. and strawmanstory.info, and you may download his book at that website, strawmanstory.info. He is producer of The Corporation Nation, also Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination, which he produced in 2011. He also produced Kaffir School, School Districts, and The Lottery. He also produced Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Privatization in 2013. And now his most recent video, which was published on September 25th, 2016, Vote Nota for President in 2016. And we were talking about, before we went to the break, about the CEO of the United States is really the president, or the president is really the CEO of the corporation of the United States. It's not a country. It is a corporation.
Am I coming through okay? I just switched my little sound thing here.
Yes, you sound great, and I don't hear my echo.
In reality, we know Washington, D.C., or the nation, as the District of Columbia, which at one time they said it was called New Columbia, which has a whole history that I started studying after I visited Philadelphia and saw all the really horrible things I saw. When we're talking about a nation, what we're really talking about is much deeper than just a corporation. Yes, it's a corporation, but that's kind of a generic term that doesn't really mean, I have to really explain what that means. No, it's not a corporation like Target or Kmart. Yes, yes, yes. No, it's actually called a district. And again, you won't understand what that means. You just say, okay, it's the district. Okay, great. We're all districted. We all are in voting districts. We're in water districts. We're in sewer districts. What's the big deal, right? It's a district. Well, have you ever looked up what the word district actually means? You live in it. You agree to it. You seem to wave the flag and love it. So have you ever actually considered what the word district means? And it turns out that the word district, again, is a simile to other words, which are distress, distraint, and seizure.
Right.
So you're put into a distraint, or you're put in under law, which, again, is to endure. You're put in a vessel, a ship, a citizenship, that may only operate commercially in a certain way. It's followed a strict law. It's the opposite of the moral law. It's the opposite of the biblical law. It's the opposite of the natural law. It's the strict law of Rome, basically, that has been modernized for our current nations. And so when you're in a district, or when you're born into a district, again, you're called a natural born citizen. Of course, a citizen is an artificial thing, so you cannot really be born as a fiction. You know, cartoons don't actually come out of a womb, right? Fictional things aren't actually born. So the word born, again, must mean something completely different than what it is to be born from your mother. It must be an artificial womb, an artificial matrix, as they call it. Right, so everything is fictional. Everything has to be looked at according to what it truly is. And if you're talking about something fictional, a title, a flattering title, the name, and anything that is not of nature, not of reality, or not a creation of God, for those that prefer that terminology, it's all the same. Well, then you can't think of it as natural. You can't think of being a natural-born citizen as anything in nature. It's all in the district. It's all words and terms of art that exist only in that jurisdiction. If I say I'm a natural-born citizen to someone who doesn't give a crap, or to someone who's free of all the nations, they don't care. They're not bound by any international law that says they can't harm a U.S. citizen. It's a fiction. I have to be a party to that law of nations to give a crap about that. Unfortunately, most places are a party to that law of nations. But you have to understand that the nations are all districts. They are corporations, yes, but they're districts. And another word for district is actually Caesar. As in Julius Caesar, we say seizure, and it's kind of the same thing. But the word Caesar, it's a flattering title that was bestowed on the basically the supreme rulers of the nations. So, you know, it's Kaiser is the correct term for Caesar.
Ah, right.
Right. Kaiser. You know, so that's where, and you know, the story keeps going. You look, you see that 666 is the number of the beast. What does that actually mean? It means 666, translated in the Hebrew language, which is a numerical language, actually means Nero Caesar. You translate that, it goes down to Kaiser, and then it goes down to district, and you come up with the world basically being districted into nations all under the Pope, all under the crown, which is not England, but the crown of the Vatican, basically. So, you know, it's very difficult to get people to stop thinking of their nations as in patriotism, to stop waving the national flag, which is actually a war flag. The lines going vertical no, excuse me, horizontal is a sign of war, and you can actually look up the peace flag of the United States, which is horizontal or vertical lines. And then the actual shield or the stars and the blue banner and the stars is actually the heraldic arms of the Washington family. Right, so that's what you're worshiping when you're worshiping this flag, which is actually the arms, the seal and arms of the United States. It's the Washington heraldic flag. Of course, Washington, a direct descendant of the kings of England. That's what's actually happening. So it all goes back into the crown. This is the reason why all presidents are related to the king. This is not up for debate. I'm sorry. It's not something irrelevant. It's not something, oh, it just happens to be. No. No, it just doesn't happen to be that Obama is not a black person. He's actually a white person, and he's a direct descendant of King John. That's not an accident. It's not an accident that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have the same exact type of genealogy, because that's who rules us. That family, that bloodline, that's the Old Testament law. We're not following the New Testament law, which says pay no attention to the Jewish fables and fabled genealogies. We're still practicing the old law, the Old Testament, because we're not following the law that's laid out in the Bible. Therefore, they have this whole system set up for us, basically a Jewish system, right? A Mosaic law, if you will.
Right.
Right? It's real simple. It's not complicated once you finally get over the hump and you actually see what's actually going on. And so, you know, that's going to be the next notive video is the bloodlines. Why is Bush president? Why is his father president? Why was Pierce president? Because Barbara Pierce or Barbara Bush is Bush's mother. That's why is it all in the family at all times? Well, why are all presidents related to George Washington? Why? Well, it should be obvious by now why we don't elect president, because that nation, that district was that corporation was created by the bloodline, and the Constitution is very clear. We're establishing and ordaining de facto and de jure. We're establishing this government for this corporation for ourselves and our posterity. That doesn't include you. That doesn't include someone from China. You know, that's just not how it works.
Well, the whole idea that the Constitution was something to protect our rights and all of that kind of thing is ridiculous, because it was done behind closed doors by the very elite that you're referring to, and we certainly didn't have any say-so in it, and it was done by the elite for the elite. And
it protects the rights of those who are not in or citizenships of the United States. The only thing that the Constitution protects are the rights of those who reserve all their rights. That's the difference. A U.S. citizenship gives up or sells his soul, basically, to accept the franchise rights of being a citizen of the United States. But a private person or a one of the people of the several 50 states, those people are not U.S. citizens. Those people are private. They are very much protected by the Constitution in a negative capacity, meaning that the negative concept of law states, hey, I have the right not to be harmed, to be put in prison, to be, you know, put in pain, punished tax. But again, Title 42, Section 1981 of the U.S. Code for U.S. citizens says it is your right that we are creating, bestowing, and forcing upon you. Go read it, 1981, Section 1981, Title 42, says it's your right to be put in pain, punished, taxed, licensed, and extorted. The word is exacted, which is even worse than extortion. It's the taking of something that's not someone's due.
Wow.
Right? That is your right as a citizen, your right as a non-citizen of the nation, of the district, to be undistricted, in other words, to not be under Caesar. It is your right to not have Title 42, Section 1981 applied to you because you don't have a person, a status, as a U.S. citizenship. You are private. You are foreign, just as all of 50 states are foreign from the United States. The word and each state is foreign from each other, so that's what the word several actually means. Several is not a word that means together.
Oh, that's right.
It means separate. It means foreign. So the several states are foreign to each other. That's what several means. Private or foreign are the same words.
Right.
So we're very confused in this country. We worship the very thing that enslaves us. We're not standing on the land, which is the states. We're national citizens, and so at all times we're existing only in fiction, only in a nationality, which has nothing to do with the territory or land. We're always trespassing on someone else's land. That's what it means to be public. Someone's private land is being licensed out through agency as a third party to the federal government, which is the principal. We're acting in agency, basically as an employee of that government in commerce, and so we have public license or easement to walk on what they call public land. But under no circumstances can any public person have or tread on the private land of the landholders of the territories, of the states. They are the people, we are not. And that's very difficult. Unless you see it all laid out, which is what I do in my book, unless you see that all laid out with all the terms and all the definitions and everything else, that is something that most people will say, oh, this guy. I guarantee you, folks, that's not my opinion. I don't want it to be that way. That's the way it is. That's the way the law books say it is. That's the way the law says it is. If you don't like it, that's fine. But don't say it's not true just because, you know, because you choose not to do your due diligence and find out, because you choose to listen to people who tell you, hey, wave your flag every holiday, celebrate your masters, celebrate your rulers, which you do not vote for.
Exactly, right. When you made the lethal injection, the story vaccination, and you talked about the statutes that are involved in those laws that they use, that we're just a bunch of guinea pigs, that they can do pretty much anything that they want to us. And, I mean, you actually look at the law. And I think that, as you said, it does put some people off. They don't want to do the research. They don't have to, actually. You've done a lot of this for people, for us, which I totally appreciate. But, I mean, we are just living like in a cave. We see the shadows on the wall.
Exactly.
And we just don't see reality and see things for how they really are. And a lot of this, of course, is due to the media. And,
Well, you know what it is, Deanna. There's, you know, if you go and you study, a lot of times, like, you'll come up, I don't know if you've noticed this before, but, you know, I'm up a lot of sleepless nights with things going through my mind, things that are dots that have been there a long time that haven't been connected yet, you know, and then finally I'll sit there and I'll figure out an answer and I'll connect the dot, but I don't have the right question. Or I don't have the right terms yet to explain what it is that I just figured out, right?
Sure.
Because I connected, some information got connected, but I still don't understand, you know? Well, what we're in is what's called a spoils system. If you look at the history.
Oh, yes.
If you look at the history of the spoils system compared to the merit system, these are the words I didn't have before, but the merit system is technically a system of appointing employees to office in the civil service and of promoting them for competency only, for their merits, for what they've done in their record, what have they done actually as opposed to what they say they've done. And Black's Law says, hey, merit system, that's opposed in the United States to what's called the spoils system, right? So meritorious,
right.
If you're meritorious, if you're in office because you've done something wonderful, you're possessed or characterized by your merits in the legal sense of the word. Merits is basically I mean, it can be interpreted different ways, but I think everybody understands the concept of what the merit system is. We have merit badges, for instance, that show that we've accomplished some feat in the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. We get merit badges that shows, hey, I've done something, and I deserve to be in this office because of my record, because I can prove, you know, on my merit that I... Then we have the spoils system. And one of the things I really want people to understand is that, you know, we call it organized crime, we call it all these things, but you have to think of the United States district, the jurisdiction of the nation. Remember, it's the law of the sea. Okay, the rule of the road is also a term that actually means water. The rule of the road is, it used to be what they said on maritime ships. It doesn't matter how you look at it, we're on... and I've got all kinds of court cases that explain how somehow the land became virtual water and the entire structure of the land was then under the law of the sea.
All righty. We are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. Before you were talking about, or you made a distinction, you were talking about the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and merit badges and that kind of thing, if I knew now what I knew back in the day, I never would have, I would have opposed my son being a member of the Boy Scouts. But anyway,
Because it's sponsored by Homeland Security? What's wrong with that?
It's very Masonic in nature. It's really a very militant group. It gets young men into the uniform mentality, the badge mentality. You know, let's have some sergeant stripes on our arm. Let's have some other, you know, insignias on our pocket. But you made the distinction between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And there's just a very great deal of difference between the two. The Old Testament is, well, it's pretty vicious and pretty full of war and hate and killing and genocide. And then you get to the New Testament, it's completely different. And as you said, when you start connecting the dots, and when you said that, it connected another dot for me regarding some of the things that I have been reading recently. And that's how we learn things.
Sure. I stress again that the way that I learn the best is honestly to make a fool out of myself by insisting that I know something that I don't. And then finding out later, hey, I'm full of crap too. But the difference is that I'll go back and correct myself and have absolutely no shame about it because I'm correcting myself. I'm saying, hey, look, I told you something that's wrong. You do that too, Deanna. That's why I like you. Very few people, especially those who've written books or have put something in some kind of permanent, you know, thing, will retract. This is why I don't like authors. This is why I don't want to be an author. But for the most part, why I'm taking so long to actually finish the final copy of the book is because I want to make sure that there's nothing in there that 3 years down the road I'm going to look at myself and going to say, I didn't know what I was talking about back then. I want to make sure that I'm putting everything down exactly as it is written, not by my hand, but by the ancient scribes and scholars and everything else, all the concordances and all the greatest legal minds, which is, you know, kind of an oxymoron. But, you know, I want to make sure that nothing of this is coming from me. Now, I don't want to know, or I don't want to tell you how I think things should be. I think everybody has an idea of how things should be. I want to know how it is. I want to know how things are. And the concept of connecting these dots, the reason we can't connect the dots is because this system is so evil, so spoiled, so corrupt, that most people cannot possibly contemplate that, first of all, something could be that corrupt, and second of all, that anybody could think that way. How could you possibly be so freaking evil that you would want to do this to people, to cause their children to be tainted and never be landholders and never to and just completely steal everything, all their posterity, everything from these people. Why would you do that? That's the problem.
Exactly. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Today is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. You may download his book, the one that he was referring to, at strawmanstory.info. He is the producer of The Corporation Nation and Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination, which, excuse me, which he produced in 2011. And he also produced Kaffir School, School Districts, and the Lottery, as well as Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Privatization, and that came out in 2013. His newest film, Vote Nota for President, in 2016. Okay, let's talk about the spoil system. You brought that up, and...
Well, I mean, the correct question would be, do you think that we are in a meritorious system? Do you think that our politicians are in place because of some meritous reason, some things that they've done that merit or warrant them to be in their positions of authority? Or do you think that they're there by the spoils of war?
Definitely the spoils of war. I talked about this in one of my books, how in the early days of this nation, that people were awarded because they did a particular thing. You know, they won a war, they killed so many people, or they were able to conspire and participate with somebody else in getting a bunch of money. I mean, it was all done by the spoils system. Nothing was meritorious.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what happens. So what happens when a president goes into office? Well, he cleans house, right? He says, well, I'm gonna appoint a whole new cabinet. I'm gonna make those appointments myself. Forget what anybody else thinks. I'm going to then, possibly appoint some Supreme Court justices. I'm gonna appoint, and I think that people don't often consider this, but Let's, you know, if I were to ask you, Deanna, how many people in the executive office or the executive branch of government, how many of those people are appointed?
All of them.
Exactly. Your president is appointed. He then appoints offices. Those offices that appoint, you've got an entire structure, an entire branch of government that is appointed. Then you've got the judicial branch, which for all intents and purposes doesn't even exist anymore. It's all in the executive branch under the Bar Association, which is in the executive branch, the court system, which is in the executive branch. So you've got, well, now you've got two branches, essentially, where no one is voted for in the federal government. And then you've got the senators and the congressmen or the House and the senators. And let's face it, those are choices between Democrats and Republicans.
Exactly.
As well. So really, technically, we're getting a slate of appointed officials. Yes, we do have a direct election where the people actually do vote, the common people, I should say, do vote for senator and do vote for their representatives. But, again, you don't get to vote no.
Right.
You don't get to say, no, I don't like those choices. Those are the choices of the political parties. I want someone that's actually going to represent me, not their political party. I want someone that's not a member of a political party. I want someone that says, hey, I'm going to take care of you. No, you don't get to choose. You only get to see Webster's dictionary and even Black's Law defines a vote, a public vote, a common vote, or a popular vote as a public prayer.
Why oh, yeah, that was very interesting.
Why?
Your movie. Oh.
Well, that's because, you know, we go to the word God. God is a very generic term. God yeah. can mean magistrate, king, judge, mayor. God is simply he who is a creator or he who is in power over some thing. Well, guess what? You're praying when you vote. You're literally praying to your gods, to your elect. Right? The elect are already there. The elite are already there. The higher upper class are already there. And you're saying, hey, please, pretty, please, pretty, 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 please, could you put Hillary in there? Oh, no, pretty, 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 please, I want Donald Trump. Oh, no, pretty, pretty, please. Right? It's,
yes.
You're not choosing, you're praying, you're offering a prayer. And if you look up the word prayer, you know, this might sound nuts to some people, but if you look up the word pray or the word plead, that's what you're doing in courts. You're praying to the God that resides over the court. It's a magistrate. Magistrate and God are the same words. The judge.
Right?
That's what you're doing. You're not participating in any. You're already guilty the second you're birthed into the nation. Right? You go to court and you're already guilty. It doesn't matter what you pray or plead. See, this is the problem. We don't realize we're in captivity. We're in nativity, which means to be born in captivity. That's what the nativity scene was. Jesus being born in captivity. That's why he put his whole entire, you know, he's crucified. He crucified himself from society, becoming a free man. He wasn't hanging on a cross. There was no cross. It was a storos or a pica. When it says, you know, pick up your stake and follow me, it means pick up your cross, which means stake. A stake is something that you have in a corporation, right? Stake is something, it's your house, it's all the legal things that you have in society. Pick up your stake. Follow me back into nature. Follow me back into the natural law. That's what's happening. It's all figurative, you see. That's why the Bible is the foundation of law. If you don't follow Christ, you're going to follow some other god. You're always going to have a god. That's the point. Unless you choose, you know, make your election sure, as the Bible says, well, then you're always going to have some other god. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Because God means president, king, magistrate, pope. Those are all gods. The pope, for God's sake, the pope even calls himself the vicar or replacement or antichrist, anti-god. Replacement for, instead of, that's what Antichrist means. And of course, so that the people don't ever figure out that's what the Pope is, the Church creates this big monster, three-headed, you know, Hydra thing that they call the Antichrist, whereas the Bible says there will be many Antichrists, and it's referring to men who pretend to be gods. Well, what else does it say? It says all the gods of the nations are idols. Who are the gods of the nations? Who created the nations? The founding fathers? Oh, they're the gods, you see. This is the thing I'm trying to get across to people is, look, you're going to have a god. Whether you believe in God, whatever it is that you've been trained to believe, you're going to have a god. That god is either going to be a president, it's going to be a magistrate of some sort, a judge, a mayor is a god, a magistrate. They're all, go look it up. This is not my opinion, I'm telling you. This is not my opinion. This is, until you start acting the part, until you start acting under the law, then you're going to be bound by some other law. Until you act under the highest law, you're going to be bound by the lowest law of the gods that have entrapped you and tricked you and publicly educated you and entertained you through their media into being public servants, slaves, voluntary slaves. It's all voluntary. So, sorry, that's a rant.
No, I like your rants. And you explain a lot of this about prayer and about gods in your recent movie, your recent video.
Well, yeah, and I really want to stress that is that the legal dictionaries consider your vote as a whole, as a popular vote, a popular, And by the way, have you ever noticed, Deanna, that when they're counting the popular vote, that they're saying the recent polls?
Yeah.
Say this?
Yes, yes.
Well, yeah. Wait a minute. What's a poll?
It's something that they say that they talk to a lot of people, but
yeah, it's a public opinion.
Yes, by who? Who gave this opinion?
But that's not an election. That's a public opinion. It's a prayer.
Ah.
It means absolutely nothing. It's like really what the polls or the popular vote is to ensure that people are still falling for the frickin' organized criminal political party structure and electoral college structure, which is straight out of the Roman Empire. Right? I mean, that's what the polls are for. Because it's already true that 50% of people don't vote, give or take, right? So it's impossible to have a majority of the vote anyway. But if people started not voting or voting none of the above, well, then their polls would tell them, oh, crap, we're a little too cocky, a little too arrogant, a little too confident in our confidence game, and we better start, making more movies about how honorable it is to be president, or, you know, some other way to trick people into believing that they're actually participating in a process that has nothing to do with them, except to garner their poll, their consent, their opinion, their prayer, and ensure that these people stay gods, basically, of their own system.
Now, you used a particular state in the movie, and you said, well, if only three people voted, and two of them voted for the same thing, and one of them voted for the opposite candidate, that the whole state, even if only three people voted, the whole state would go to the candidate that got the two votes.
Well, don't take my word for it. Let's go to the National Archives.
Yes.
The National Records Archives, they're in charge of the entire electoral process, okay? Exactly. National Archives, which is where I'm sourcing from, of course. Go to the primary source. Here's what it says. How is it possible? This is the question and answer, the fact. Question and answer portion. It says, how is it possible for the electoral vote to produce a different result than the nationwide popular vote? How is that possible? How is it that Al Gore clearly won the popular vote, but George Bush got the presidency? Because he clearly won the electoral college vote. Well, here's the answer, and it's amazing to me that this could be the answer, so blatant, so in your face, and yet you look and you see 100 million people out there going out to vote, because they've never bothered to see, hey, guess what, your vote doesn't count. Here's what it says. How is it possible? It is important to remember that the president is not chosen by a nationwide popular vote. So here's government. Here's its answer. Well, you dumbass, the president isn't chosen by a nationwide popular vote. What are you thinking? I mean, you're welcome to go out and vote and give us your prayer and your opinion, your poll, but hey, we don't elect our president. We're voters. We're in a franchise. We're not the electors. We're not the elect. We're not the upper class. We're the lower class. That's why we're voters. That's why we're praying to our gods. Next thing it says is the Electoral College vote totals determine the winner. Let me say again, the Electoral College vote totals determine the winner, not the statistical plurality or majority a candidate may have in the nationwide popular vote totals. Right? So it says that 48 out of 50 states award electoral votes on a winner-takes-all basis, as does the...
So police are out of control in our country, and...
So it says, for example, all 55 of California's electoral votes go to the winner of the state election, even if the margin of victory is only 50.1% to 49.9%. All right? So imagine in California, let's just say there's 55 million people. Okay? 55 million people who vote. Of that, 27.5% vote one way and 25.71% vote another way. That means that of the popular vote, all 55 million popular votes then go technically to the winner of the state election. So basically the state election, what I'm trying to tell you is this is not a national election. It's a state election for president. The states vote for who is president, and they allow the common citizenry who have no stake in the states, they're only national citizens, they allow us to vote. In the original system, of course, only landholders could vote. Well, they decided to trick us and make us think that we're equal to the landholders, to the private people of the states, by allowing us, the common citizenry, to vote. Well, it's a trick. It's a scam. And so the concept that, hey, if we all stayed home and didn't vote, all it would take is for one person or for three people or for five people to go and vote. All it takes is one person to vote Democrat, two people to vote Republican out of that 55 million people, and guess what? The two people would win.
Right.
The two people would be the majority no matter how many people didn't vote. Now, inversely, if those people went out and said none of the above, if all those millions of people, instead of not voting, went out and said none of the above, none of the above, they wrote it in, even though you're not supposed to, guess what? If you had 54 million votes that said none of the above, and you still had two votes that said Republican and one vote that said Democrat, who do you think would win?
Well, the majority, I mean.
The majority, but you see, the majority voted for the Republicans.
Sure.
So this is what's happening in India. I ran across a newspaper article that was quoting one of India's officials, because India actually added none of the above, because they are a country that has elections.
Sure.
So, and they came out and they said, even if 99.99% of people vote none of the above, the majority is still going to win. The majority of people who vote for a candidate will still win the election.
Right.
So they're saying that even if 99.999% of you people who are listening right now go and purposefully say none of the above, that you're still going to not be heard. Your vote still will not count, because the whole thing is based on the Electoral College process, and all they're looking for is the single majority vote of who should be picked out of the electors that are appointed by the frickin' political parties.
Right.
Okay? That's how free you are in America. That's the truth about this system. You're living a lie by participating at all in this system, but especially by participating in the vote. You are literally loving the lie. I'm
right.
Telling you. And that is shameful to me. Shameful to me that I was ever a registered voter and went to vote.
I haven't voted for quite some time, and because... Well, it just isn't effective. It doesn't work. I don't believe in the candidates or the system. It's an illusion. It's an illusion of freedom.
And that's what I'm trying to get across here, Deanna, is that it's hopeless no matter what. Unless every single person out there votes none of the above and no one votes for a political party, which you know is not going to happen.
Right.
Right? There's always going to be some douchebag or some political party member that says, hey, I'm getting $1 million a year because I'm part of the political party. Hell no, I'm not going to vote none of the above. I'm going to continue the status quo. I'm going to continue the bloodline. Are you kidding me? Get out of here. Right? You're never going to defeat this system. No matter what you do, if you vote, you're voting yes. If you don't vote, you're voting yes. If you vote none of the above, you're just basically saying yes. Every
yes.
vote you do is a yes for the political parties.
Yes.
Yes for those who have been running this system since day one. I don't know if I can really get that across to people. You're voting yes no matter what you do. You're not electing, you're praying.
Yes.
And your prayer may or may not be answered depending on which side of the coin you happen to fall on. That's
yes.
all I can say.
You know, one of the things in your video that you elaborated on, or you listed all of the countries that actually have direct voting for the president. And I was really kind of amazed. You know, all these so-called horrible, horrible terrorist countries, and they have direct voting. Well, people actually get to vote for their president.
Well, to be clear, you know, I am not necessarily...
We're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And if you'd like to visit the chat room, just visit spingola.chatango.com. Chatango is Chatango. Chatango.com. Spingola.chatango.com. And we will take calls in the next hour. And you can also send email to comment@spingola.email. Our guest today is Clint Richardson, who is very, very passionate about what he does. And his websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And to download his new book, which isn't finished yet, but it's in he's going to be working on it. You could work on it for the rest of your life, Clint, right?
Yeah, I'm just going through it one last time to just to smooth it out and make sure, you know, it's amazing how many mistakes you can not see. You
sure,
know?
Tell me about it.
So, yeah, I'll be uploading the final version here probably within a month or two, something like that. Just as soon as I can get it done, and then I'm going to print it finally. I want to thank everybody who is listening that did participate. I found a local company that I could print the book without any of the marks and numbers and signs and symbols of evil from the state, you know, no ISBN. And so it's a completely private. And the trick there is to look for a printer, not a publisher, because the book's private. It's not published at all in any way, shape, or form, so it won't be part of the, you know, you won't find it in a library or with any kind of ISBN number or anything like that. I did raise enough money to meet the tier that it's at least affordable to print. I'd like to get to the next tier, but I'm very, very, very thankful to everybody who participated and donated to allow me to actually print a couple, you know, at least 1,000 or maybe 1,200 copies at this point. And at that point, the price per book is so low that I can afford to give some away, that kind of thing, you know, to people who can't, you know, give donations or whatever. So it's a very rewarding feeling to know that people gave, you know, without even expecting anything in return, just so I could print this thing and actually have it be a permanent part of, if you will, history, and instead of just some digital format that could be erased at any time. Very, very, makes me feel really good, and I want to tell people thank you from, you know, not just thank you, but whatever's above thank you. You know, makes me feel really good.
That's great.
Yeah, thank so...
sharing that.
I want to say one thing, and that is because, you know, we might get some calls in about the electoral system and how it's constitution. It's right in the constitution that the senators. Well, it is. The senators will appoint the electors, and that's what they did, was they turned it over to the state. The states will appoint the electors, in other words, the representatives or the senators, and, you know, it is the system. It is how it's supposed to work. And if you read the history and the writings of the quote-unquote, you know, I don't like to call them my fathers, but those people who created this corporation, they specifically designed it that way because, hell no, you're not going to want a bunch of illiterate people, who most people were back then and unfortunately still are today because they only know the English language, the common language. You know, you don't want a popular vote. We don't want a democracy. Democracy is a horrible thing to these people because... And it is. Democracy always, as Plato wrote about in his Five Regimes, democracy is the lowest form of government that you can get to before, you know, everything goes into ruination and tyranny. And I agree with that. My problem is not so much the way the system works, as much as it is the way which by the way means that we elect the people, the common people elect their representatives, and then the representatives, quote unquote, choose who the president of the, so it's like a board of directors, which is the Senate and the Congress, choose the president of the corporation. It's the same model, right?
Right.
But in this case, they've used conjuration, they've used trickery, they've used the media to make us think that we are actually the ones that are voting. That's my problem. They've fooled us in a great, great way.
Exactly. All righty, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Clint Richardson. A few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I wrote an article about Intermountain Healthcare and about the 15 hospitals that the LDS Church donated back in 1975. And I posted this on a website for, well, people who had been Mormons or had some very negative opinions about Mormons and about Mormonism. And yet, they really, most of the comments were, no, the LDS Church did actually donate the hospitals. And you and I had talked about this previously, and you told me that, no, they developed a holding company into which they put these hospitals, and so I wanted you to explain how that works.
Well, I think you have to understand how the hierarchy of the church actually works before you can understand the business model, the business structure. You have to understand just this outrageous thing that they call a church. First of all, you know, you've got this giant corporate structure. The building here in the what they call the, what do they call it? The Vatican of the United States, which is the place where the main Mormon temple and the corporate buildings and all that stuff is. Amazing, amazing amount of wealth. They just built a new mall, and it's so amazing. You have to understand that back when Mormonism was started, we're talking about is Freemasonry. Freemasonry put into a new form. I tried to convince when we had We Are Change here in the Salt Lake in the Utah area here, we were trying to explain to people that the Mormonism is basically just Masonry rebranded. And we couldn't convince them, so we went down to BYU, Brigham Young University, and we showed them these pictures. And it's so funny because the look on these people's faces is just like, oh my God. The sports team that they used to have for Brigham Young University, you'll never guess what their symbol was on their shirts, on their jerseys for their football team. The compass and the square with the G in the middle.
Wow.
All right, so there it is. There's your evidence, right? Just that small little thing. And, that, you know, of course you read about it. It's all based on the Masonic concept. And with that comes the Masonic oath, which is similar to the now defunct Mormon oath. Of course, it's defunct with the members of the church, but the higher-ups, not so much. You're talking about a Freemasonic cult, basically, a little offshoot of Freemasonry that has the same oath that if you, you know, it's very much a church record for that, you know, if you reveal the secrets of the church, which they call sacred, sacred and secret aren't the same thing, well, then you will suffer the consequences, which, of course, is that, slit across the
throat.
Yeah, the symbology of having your throat slit, which is what happened to, you know, Morgan, who wrote and Exposed Masonry, you know, that kind of thing. So you have to first understand that the underwear, the undergarments, as they call them, the garments that everybody wears, which are part of the corporation. So in other words, everybody has to buy their underwear from the church. That's a huge business too. The symbols that are on the underwear, the undergarments, are the compass, the square, and then two other Masonic symbols. All right, so this thing is steeped in masonry. So that means that you have to understand what masonry is and how it works and what its true purpose is. And really the only way you can understand that is to go and read certain people who have exposed it and died for exposing it, like Captain Morgan, who wrote the book. And basically what he explained is that there is no, when it comes to a secret society, there are no actual secrets. They're called the Society of the Secret. And the secrets they hold are only that it's just organized crime, that when I go into court, I'm going to recognize a fellow brother, and the Masonic code is, hey, unless this guy has done something horribly, horribly wrong, murder or, you know, some other crime that is just so, you know, horrible, then a brother's going to let a brother go. That's the brotherhood, right? Right? So when it comes to the church selling off its assets, when I first started looking into the Mormon church, what I was really going after was its comprehensive annual financial report. I thought, why not? The Methodist church, they have a conference and they have a comprehensive annual financial report. All these other churches that are corporations have comprehensive annual financial reports, right? Which shows they're not religions, but corporations. But I couldn't find one for the Mormon church. I even stormed into the corporate offices of the Mormon church, you know, and I demanded that they give me their financial report. And they were so arrogant and cocky, they said, we don't give that out. We don't allow the public to see our financial situation. I'm like, you have to. You're a corporation. Da, 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 da. Well, come to find out, they're not a corporation of the United States. They're what's called a corporation sole. Yeah, just like the Queen and the Pope and the several other, you know, archbishops and that kind of thing. They're a corporation soul. And the corporation is called the Corporation of the President of the Mormon Church, however that big long name, you know, Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So I actually could not demand their financial statements. I have no right to, because they're not a public corporation like, say, the Methodist Church or any of the other religions out there. All right, so basically what I started finding is that the church, for instance, in their Bonneville Communications and other corporations, holding companies that they have TV stations, radio stations, talk radio stations. And I started looking and I found that, God, what the hell, man? Bonneville Corporation has every single talk radio station in Washington, D.C. is owned by the Mormon Church, or their holding company, Bonneville. Every single talk radio station, political radio station in Washington, D.C. that anybody can hear is owned by the church. Which, wow. When I say church, that's a, you know, it's not really a church. It's a Masonic organization. So I'm looking at this, I'm going, oh my God, what is going on here? And I start searching on it, and then I start seeing that they're selling off their assets. But they're not just selling assets, they're selling their assets only to church members. All right, so Zions Bank is a good example. Got sold to, Sorensen, who also is the board of directors for some other major corporations all over. And so you see, So you see that what's happening is that the church is coming under so much scrutiny from people like me and Dr. H. Truat, and all these people are exposing it for what it is, now you, and congratulations, by the way. I wonderful article. I said, oh, my God. So I start to see this pattern of them selling off their assets, or I should say donating away their assets, because the corporation's getting so damn huge that they can't hide it anymore. You know, the president of the church, which they call their prophet, their non-profit prophet, is the main, you know, CEO of railroads and monstrous corporations all over the world. They invested heavily in the building of Las Vegas, the pharmaceutical companies, all these different things. And you're like, holy crap, what's going on? And then they start giving those corporations away to their highest, wealthiest members who all of their wealth is because of the church, right?
Right.
So now let's go back to the Masonic oath, blood oath thing here. Okay, the church, it's well known here, and I even met the guy through Truat. The church has political assassins. The church has people who literally will destroy you if you go against the church. They will rob you of all the wealth that you've obtained because of your membership in that Masonic organization. Now, we're talking about the higher-ups here. Now, I don't want anybody to be offended because they're a member of a church or a member. You're just like, you know, I make fun of you just like I make fun of every voter out there. You're just useful idiots, okay? We're talking about the corporate structure, the higher-ups, the people that are the bloodline of the church, which Truat happened to be until he found all the corruption, right?
Right.
So you go back.
They threatened him to stop practicing natural medicine.
Absolutely.
Because it was interfering with the profits, because they had invested heavily into big pharma, correct?
Sure. Curing cancer without all of their poisons and witchcraft, that's horrible. That's against the best interests of the church. So take your energy healing and you know, stop doing it. That's the main reason he quit. And his family was one of the original quorum of the 100 or whatever, you know, however that system works. And he really, I wish I could remember everything he's ever told me, because I mean, it's just like, holy crap. But the point I'm trying to make, Deanna, is that it's not that the church is unloading their assets. They're taking them out of the corporate structure that is the corporation's soul, just like the Vatican and everything is in the corporation's soul of the Pope, right? And the Queen, whichever country she goes to that's in the United Kingdom, she's a different corporation soul wherever she goes. So she's the corporation soul, the Queen of the Netherlands, the Queen of this, the Queen of that. In Canada, she's the Queen of the province, or she's Queen of the country, or she's Queen. But each one of those, she appears as a different corporation soul. All the assets are in that corporation, right? Same with the church, okay? So what I'm trying to tell you is that they started taking things out of that corporation soul because it's such an old model. And through the blood oath, through the idea that if you double-cross the church, the corporation, you're literally going to be politically assassinated, and if you break your oath, start telling the secrets, well, you know. We're talking about giving these corporations to high-up members who are buying them, so they're still in the church. They still benefit the church. The boards of directors of one corporation will be on the boards of directors of the other, and the CEO will be of the church, and this will be of the... So it's still a church-run thing. It's just being taken out of the corporate structure, just like any other city or town or place you go to where all of the higher-up people in the town or the state or whatever are Freemasons. All of your chief of police, your sheriff, your, you know, including Sheriff Mac, your whoever you're talking about that is in the highest positions are of the Brotherhood. And they're not going to give up their wealth or their fame or their fortune by going against the Brotherhood. That would be foolish and probably a deadly choice. So everything is still in the quote-unquote church or among its membership, but it's just a different structure now. It's just coming out of that old model of the corporation's soul.
And they started doing this when they were with the... There was a law passed, 1887. Oh, what was the name of that law? The United States government was going against them because of their polygamy and because of the all of the power that they were accruing. And so they started to put their properties into different into other people's hands at that time, back in 1887.
Absolutely.
So this is not a new tactic, but no. It's a very old tactic.
Sure, and you have on the record, you have the Smoot case, which I know you've read, where the Smoot is a very famous Mormon name, of course, family name, and the other states did not want to accept a Mormon as a senator or a congressman because, well, the Mormons were known for all kinds of criminal activity, from gold counterfeiting, which is why they're being chased out of the United States, the territories that were under the United States, why they had to go away. Now, the Mormon church would say, oh, we were persecuted, we were, the military was literally ordered to kill, just as the Jews were run out of every country, the Mormons were run out of every country, or in this case, state or territory, because they were criminally, absolutely horrible, doing horrible things. They'd go into a society and they'd set up shop and they would absolutely alter the society, just like the Jews did in Germany. Why did Germany want to get rid of the Jews? Because they started taking over everything and changing people's perceptions and started, the money started accumulating, so they chased them out. It's the same story. I don't know how to get that across to people who believe in the, oh, we're a persecuted people. Well, gee, that's the same thing the Jews tell you, isn't it?
Right.
The invention of the Jewish people. Well, here's the invention of the Mormon people who are persecuted. No, they were criminals. Joseph Smith is known to be a diviner, and they're, this. Nobody wants to admit this, of course, but the Mormon Church practices, for all intents and purposes, necromancy. Are you familiar with necromancy?
Tell me about it.
Well, baptisms for
dead. Yeah, they
communication with the dead. Now go to your Bible, go to Strong's Concordance or the BlueLetterBible.com and type in necromancy and see what it says. Right? Or go look up the word necromancy and you'll see it's communion with the dead and specifically to change future events, right? So the idea is that somehow after death you can cause these people to go to the Mormon version of heaven, which is the planet Kolob or whatever. It's kind of like Scientology. There's a whole hidden story behind the Mormon, thing that you're not supposed to talk about unless you're a member. That's Masonry.
You know what else is so unusual? What was I going to say? Darn, I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, what you said earlier about the Old Testament. Mormonism is really an Old Testament philosophy. It's an Old Testament religion because of the practice of plural wives or polygamy. It's also adopted the idea of a theocracy where they would control the economy, where they could control the religion, where they can control the culture and everything. They wanted to they wanted a theocracy. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest is Clint Richardson. And as I was mentioning, the Mormonism is really an Old Testament kind of a religion. Not a New Testament religion based on the things that they were attempting to do. And on January 30th, 1841, at a special church conference in Nauvoo, Illinois, the members elected Joseph Smith as the sole trustee in trust for the church. Every president since Smith has held that same position in the church. The president of the church also serves as the ex officio chairman of the church boards of trustees / education. The church educational system of the LDS Church was established in 1877. CES, or Church Educational System, consists of several institutions that provide religious and secular education for both LDS members and non-members and elementary, secondary, and post-secondary students, in addition to adult students. In 2011, about 700,000 individuals were enrolled in CES programs in 143 countries. These CES courses are separate from the religious instruction offered in the local congregations.
Oh, man.
So this is not something new.
No. I'll tell you, the cognitive, there's no more place that I see cognitive dissonance take place. That blank look, that sort of like, bizarre thing that happens when you challenge someone's authority or knowledge, you know, that is, I've never seen it more powerful than amongst this particular group of people here in Utah, but also in the surrounding, you know, Idaho, wherever you go around the Midwest here. It's an amazing thing. And one thing I've noticed is that the people who are really truly indoctrinated in it, even ones that have come away from the church, the second you start talking about it, they can be absolute buffoons and everything else, but when it comes to the doctrine of the church, they are absolutely 100% accurate in everything they say. They suddenly become a scholar. It's almost like a demon takes them over, and they start talking about the church and what its doctrine is. Blah, blah, blah. And of course, you know, you go and you see that it says the same thing, basically. It says, what we say is infallible, just like the Pope says. What I say is infallible. Even though Paul in Romans 15, you know, made it clear that the gospel had been preached and nothing, no other doctrine should be taken, you'll find that what they say is infallible. And what I find really interesting is what you said earlier. You know, as soon as civil rights came along, well, the Mormon Church doctrine says that black people have the mark of Cain. Black people are evil, they have the mark of Cain. But suddenly civil rights came along, and then all of a sudden God told the prophet that, well, actually, it was the United States that told the church that if they don't change their doctrine, they're going to be in trouble. So the God had a revelation, and the prophet had a revelation, and suddenly blacks were welcome into the priesthood in the church. It's suddenly okay.
Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Today is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com and strawmanstory.info, and that is the website where you can download Clint's book. He is the producer of The Corporation Nation, the producer of Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination, the producer of Kaffir School, School Districts and the Lottery, the producer of Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Privatization, and the producer of Vote NOTA for President in 2016. Now, you were talking about the blacks and how all of a sudden the church hierarchy received a revelation in 1978 that the blacks could now have the priesthood. And the whole concept of the blacks having the mark of Cain came from the Book of Abraham. Now, in 1835, and this was in Kirtland, Ohio, and Joseph Smith was really losing a lot of support. And there was a fellow by the name of Michael Chandler that came to town. He had four mummies, Egyptian mummies, and he had the papyrus that was with these Egyptian mummies, and the saints, the members of the church there, gathered up $2,400, and they purchased the mummies and the papyrus from Michael Chandler, and because Joseph Smith claimed that he could read and translate what was Reformed Egyptian. And the papyrus was written in Egyptian, so obviously he should be able to translate it. So anyway, he created what was referred to as the Book of Abraham. And that is where he said that the black people had the mark of Cain. And so in 1975, the Mormon Church was building a temple in Brazil. Now, the reason that they build temples, and they want temples all over, is because when you have temples, where Mormons, live and reside, they're more apt to pay their tithing if it will allow them to go to the temple. So the more temples you have, the more tithing they can collect. Well, in Brazil, you have a lot of people that have black ancestry. And so they thought, well, we've got to fix this. Otherwise, we are not going to be able to, we're going to have a lot of people with black ancestry joining the church. And, well, things aren't going to do well as far as bringing in the tithing. And so, yeah, they had a revelation. It was the same kind of revelation that they had with the manifesto. The government was going to take away some of their property, and that's when they started putting their property in the hands of other people as trustees. Because it was expedient.
Same with the polygamy. Polygamy is outlawed. If you continue with polygamy, well, then you're not going to have the privileges that we give you as a religious corporation. Bam! All of a sudden, the prophet has a revelation from God, and suddenly we figure out that polygamy is a bad thing, and that caused, I think, more than anything, the split of the church between the old church and the new church, of course. Of course, now they're highly against the old, the old fundamentalists because they still promote polygamy and everything. And, Paul Dock, Drockton, and other people that are from around here have written extensively on the sort of, they call it a spiritual wedding, or they have their regular legal wedding, and then they have a spiritual ceremony, and they're sleeping around with each other, and they build houses, and they connect their fences with gates and stuff like that, and they practice polygamy in secret. They have spiritual, and also this is a very, there's two things that are surprisingly high here. One of them is witchcraft covens, because of course Joseph Smith, George Bush, and a bunch of other people are in the same family line that they used to post at the church, and they all came from Anne Hutchinson, who lived in Salem, Massachusetts, and was a witch, according to the Catholic records, I think it was. And so it's an interesting story there. They've since modified their charts because they do Ancestry.com to exclude Anne Hutchinson from the bloodline so nobody asks questions, which I think is funny because we started passing around that chart so much that they finally said, oh, it's been downloaded so much, we're going to get rid of it, and I don't know whatever excuse they used. It's just funny, to comprehend that, Joseph Smith, the guy who started Scientology, George Bush, Mitt Romney, they're all of the same blood. There's all of the same, they all come from Anne Hutchinson, basically.
Sure.
So,
well, I posted this, this photo in the chat room of Thomas S. Monson shaking hands with George W. Bush, and it was the same handshake that you give in the temple, the patriarchal grip.
Of course.
And
that's not Mormonism. That's
Freemasonry. Yes.
Yeah, of course.
And it was interesting that the church, the LDS church, became a corporation so early. In Illinois, Governor Thomas Carlin gave them the Articles of Incorporation on February 23rd, 1841. And something else that was very interesting is that they had the Nauvoo Legion, which had more people. There were four to 5,000 people that belonged to the the Nauvoo Legion, which was, I think the U.S. government had 8,000 in the militia. And here you have this relatively small community that had 4,000 to 5,000 in their militia, called the Nauvoo Legion.
Yeah, well, they were doing some pretty bad stuff, man. And I mean, they really were.
The Council of 50, I mean, they put a hit out on Governor Boggs of Missouri because of, you know, Boggs was against what they were doing in Missouri. And so they sent, Porter Rockwell to Missouri. Smith sent Porter Rockwell to Missouri to kill him.
Here's what I find amazing, Deanna, and this is something that I was going to write about, and I was like, yeah, screw it. There's a sense of what is, you know, we would call it self-fulfilling prophecy, basically. Uh-huh. There's all kinds of local prophecies that the church has made here in the Salt Lake area. One of those happens to be that where I live, which is an area called Suncrest, which is up in the hills, the prophecy was as soon as the county expands to the point where the houses are built, where I live, right, on the hill, then that is the point where the town will be, where the church and the church and the city will be at its most corrupt. Now, I got to tell you, where I live, this, because I did some legal work for the owner of the house and the areas around here, came to found out there was a geological study from the federal government, cost $1 million. They say no houses should have been built up here, that this is a young landslide, and that nothing should be built.
Wow.
And guess what? They continued to build. They went to a local, you know, shill company and said, oh, yeah, you can build. Just put in some fill, and you're fine. The U.S. Geological Survey says no houses should ever have been built here, and none should be continued to build here. And yet the Mormon-controlled government here is allowing houses to be built here. Now, I call that something of a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words,
we
can't build there because it's a young landslide, but hey, we've got this prophecy we have to fulfill. And so I'm noticing that the whole entire Salt Lake area is becoming, especially where I live, they just built the NSA Center. They've got all Microsoft, Apple, Adobe, you know, all these corporations are coming here to be affiliated with that, and it's becoming the new Silicon Valley, if you will. And it just happens to be, you know, this used to be devoid. It used to be just desert. Now it's just building up like it's the most quick-building city ever, as, you know, as far as people moving here and all these computer corporations, communication corporations. So it's becoming this hub of evil, basically, surrounded by surrounding this NSA center that's that, you know,
yes,
quantum computing and everything. So I'm sitting here, I'm looking at similar types of prophecies that the church has said about this local area, and I'm convinced at this point that they are, you know, they bought that wherever they say, I can't remember, is it Kentucky? No, it's not Kentucky, it's Missouri, I think, is going to be the new Zion.
Right.
And they've built a city, they've built the same exact structure, and the way that the structure works here is that the church is at zero and zero, and then every street, every street goes out is 100. So I live at 123,000 blocks away from that main center. The farthest I can be, I'm actually in the next county down. And then it starts over until it gets to the next temple, which is zero and zero, right? That's the way the structure of the streets work here. So we have numbered a grid system, basically based on the church. Well, oh, gee, no, the church has nothing to do with government, right? Yeah.
Huh.
So basically, I look and I see that they've built up that place that in Missouri. If I say Missouri, that they say is going to be their new Zion. Meanwhile, they turn this place into a sanctuary state. So if you're an illegal alien, you, as long as you can get here, you can get a work permit, you know, get through the other states to here. Right? So, you know, all of a sudden you're flooded. I came here 8 years ago and I was shocked to see like white kids working in the McDonald's and in the Taco Bells and in the crappiest jobs. Now it's completely changed. Everything looks like L.A. basically. So many immigrants have come here illegally and got work permits, and so the whole atmosphere has changed now. They're literally self-destructing and fulfilling their own prophecies that this place is going to go to hell in a handbasket. They're allowing it to happen. In fact, I would say they're forcing it to happen. Like I said, no houses where I live should be built, yet they continue to build. That can only happen if someone's pulling strings in government, which is the church. I'm telling you right now, Deanna, that they still own all this property. They still are the landholders of all this area. They're renting it out to these corporations and to these people. They're building this place up like mad. They're inviting people that are not of their religion, not white, right? It's now a majority is not Mormon here in the Salt Lake County, right? So they're literally self-destructing their own thing. They're spoiling it. They're literally self-fulfilling the prophecy that this town is going to turn wicked. Meanwhile, they still own everything. It's almost like they're turning this place into a commercial, you know, haven. And all the leaders are going to go into their, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. They're going to move to
Missouri,
right, where they've built a new city. Meanwhile, they're going to still be reaping all the profits of all the corporations they've built here, all the lands, the rents, and everything else. That's what's happening here in Salt Lake City. That's why it's the fastest growing city in the United States, because they're literally, all of a sudden, they just opened the floodgates. The reason that this town was the way it was is because it was based on the church. Now they're just letting it fall apart, and you can see it happening in every single capacity, according to every prophecy they've ever made about their own city and their church. I'm convinced that what they're doing is turning this into a commercial hub that's going to bring them all kinds of rents and monies, and then they're going to retire into their little, you know, hub in Missouri, start all over, pretend that they're persecuted because now the majority is non-Mormon, but they're still going to own everything. That's what I think. That's what I see is happening right now.
Wow. Could we revisit the hospital situation?
Sure.
About why they decided to seriously, 15 hospitals, that's worth a lot of money. And I just don't see a profit-motivated corporation donating commercial hospitals. It didn't make sense to me. And talk about the clinic.
Well, yeah, so what you see across the country right now, this isn't just the Mormon church, this is all the medical corporations. The problem that we have is that hospitals are set up as Red Cross centers. We're all considered basically enemies of the state, so basically hospitals are for prisoners of war, which technically is what a citizen is. It's hard to explain that. You can look it up, but they have to treat people for free. When I go to the hospital, I go for free because I know better. I know better than to go in there and have insurance. They have to treat you, and they have to treat you well, or they'll lose their license to be a hospital. You know that a hospital is not for profit when it has an emergency room. The emergency room is your cue that anyone, an illegal alien, anyone can go in the entire world to that emergency room and get treated. That is a requirement to even be in business for a nonprofit hospital, okay? So how are they getting around that? Because that's a huge expense, right? It's a huge expense to have that nonprofit care. They start building clinics. And so you're going to notice, and you've probably noticed already, anybody who's listening, that these clinics are popping up all over the place, walk-in clinics and places that don't have an emergency room. So they're completely for profit. They don't have to treat as an Elisa Minori corporation, a charitable corporation that passes out free alms or that actually, you know, does charitable work. They don't have to do that anymore. And so if you put these hospitals into a holding corporation and you want to really advance the structure to where you're more for-profit than you are anti-profit, well, then you start building these clinics. And now we have 185 clinics here in the Salt Lake area, and I think the three-county area that makes up this main area up here. There's only 3 million people in the state, and I think 2 million are up here. So, you know, you're turning a non-profit thing, and usually what you'll find is that the companies, like big banks and other corporations like that, they'll create these holding companies or these dummy corporations that they know eventually are going to go bankrupt, or they're going to have all the financial problems, all the non-profit, whatever it takes. They put those in a separate holding company that is separate from the main company, because it'll either go out of business or it'll be operating at a loss, and therefore it won't affect their prime business. You know, if you're a charity, it's pretty hard to justify building a bunch of for-profit stuff. And so the only way they're allowed to actually offer services, just like government offers non-governmental services, hospitals offer their services to insured members is because they're doing this nonprofit work, and so they get the benefit of being able to charge outrageous prices. You know, that's the way government works. And you know, you can't think of the church, the Mormon church, as anything but a form of government, really.
Exactly. And you know, the reason that they donated, or the stipulation, was that the church, or that the that this organization that assumed control would be not for profit.
Right, and that is a, how do you say it? That is a way of basically taking it from the church, putting it into a holding corporation, saying, yeah, you know, you're going to be a nonprofit, and then, but see, nonprofit doesn't mean nonprofit. Okay? It doesn't mean you can't make profits. If that was the case, government wouldn't have the amount of money, huge amount of money it has on its books. It wouldn't have investments. It wouldn't have all the stuff we talked about with the Cather reports, right? It wouldn't have massive investment for it. It wouldn't run pension funds. It wouldn't run golf courses. It wouldn't run non-governmental things that are for-profit. It wouldn't charge you in your water bill for-profit prices. It would charge you taxpayer prices. But, you know, we're stupid enough to pay for first-class mail, for instance, when everybody should be sending letters for 3 cents.
Right,
that's the statutory price. Why are you doing anything else?
Sure. Okay, we're going to a break, and when we come back, we'll take a call from John in Texas. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. And let's real quick take John in Texas. John, you have a question? Welcome.
Yes, sir. Two things. One, why did the Founding Fathers break with England to begin with? What was behind that?
You're asking my opinion? Oh, that's a whole conversation, man. What's your point?
Well, I mean, what exactly? What was really behind this? Was it because the Bank of England had deprived them of their colonial script?
Program. It's kind of a
Think of it this way. First of all, I think the great misconception, because you always hear people talk about the United States broke away from England. They broke away from the king. They broke away from, that doesn't mean that they broke away from the Pope, right? You can have a middle management company and break away from the middle manager, which is the king. But that doesn't necessarily you actually broke away from the main corporation. We know that the colonies were actually corporations like the Virginia Company, the East India Company, etc. The governors and the people who formed the colonies were all of those companies, which were, and they called the king as God or vicar of God. So we're talking about a fallacy when you're looking at the for instance the Magna Carta. The Pope nullified the Magna Carta, and in return the king granted all the lands to the Pope. So how do you separate from the king when the king is under the Pope? Did we separate from the Pope? I don't see any evidence of that. So technically all we did was basically become a separate corporation like the Virginia Company, etc. And instead of being under the king, we basically created our own management system to be under the Pope. That would be my best answer for you.
Okay, thank you so much, John.
John, this
is kind of off topic, really.
Yeah, I mean, do you have a purpose for asking?
Well, I just wondering, is you're just discussing the Constitution and the creation of the corporation. I just wanted to know why it existed and why they created the United States to begin with.
Well, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's...
if you think about it, you had the government system. A lot of people did come here for the purpose of establishing their own way of life. And you had what were called congregational churches, where the church was the government, basically. And you had a bunch of little church governments all over the place. Mormon Church would be an example of that, except that came later. You had all these congregational societies that were based on the law of scriptures, the law of the Bible, as their highest law. And those started to get out of control to where people were, I think, you know, not that interested in being part of this commercial system that actually founded and funded the colonies. Colony, by the way, is another word for plantation or farm. So you're literally peopling a place, which is the same as putting cattle on a place. So don't be confused that the peopling of these colonies was anything but putting indentured servants and slaves into these colonies. That's why we're not the posterity of that corporate structure that they created. They were slaveholders and landholders, and they created it for themselves. My opinion is that they created it because the congregational church is the true people who were truly trying to be free of all this stuff were getting a little too, out of hand, too popular, too numerous, to where they had to say, well, heck, we gotta establish a central government to control those people who are trying to live according to the scriptural law, the orthodoxy, if you will, type of law. That's my opinion after my research.
All righty. Thank you, John.
I wanted...
Thank you, John. We're going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back. And I'd like to talk about the timing of this relinquishment of the 15 churches or 15 hospitals. Be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Clint Richardson. And about this timing, in 1971, Spencer W. Kimball, prophet who was under the, well, anyway, what he said was that we should be protecting our bodies, because they were our temples, that we should totally avoid tea, coffee, drugs, anything that would damage our body in any way, shape, or form. This was something really big. So that's 1971. 1975, they're donating these 15 hospitals. In 1977, the church came out for the first time and pretty much mandated vaccines. They said every single member of the church should be vaccinated. And so I find this very, very, well, questionable. And the other thing, too, is that, and you've done your work, the work on your, the story of vaccination, is that that is, the 70s is when the medical industrial complex really started to grow. Would you agree with that, Clint?
Sure.
And the other thing, too, that I wanted to bring up is that they placed the hospitals under the direction, or the Intermountain healthcare system was placed under the direction of Scott S. Parker. Parker's great-grandfather on his mother's side was Jesse Nathaniel Smith, who was the son of Silas Smith, the younger brother of Joseph Smith Sr. This is keeping things in the family.
That's, you know, that's what I'm trying to get across most of all to people, that it's all in the family. Whether you're talking about the U.S. government, again, flying the Washington heraldic arms, it's very easy to verify. And the Second Amendment, again, I know people don't want to, for some reason, don't want to believe this, but the Second Amendment is not about guns. It's about heraldic arms, heraldry, the right to bear your family bloodline. That's what the right to bear arms is. And when you look up the arms and seal of the United States, you find it's the flag and the seal of the United States. That's the arms of the United States. We flew the flag, the arms, we flew those on our ships when we were at sea. We either flew the ship, the country, the nation, or we flew the pirate flag. And, you know, as for all intents and purposes at this point, the United States flag is the pirate flag. It's piracy on the high seas. And that's why, you know, we forgot to talk about the spoils system. It's basically the spoils of war, the spoils of booty. You look up the word spoil, it actually means to take something by force or by law, which is essentially by force. So, again, it's your right to be extorted and have things stolen from you as a citizen by the state. That's your right as a U.S. citizen. The Constitution protects those who've reserved all their rights, and so they could not use the excuse that it's for the greater good or for the public good by trying to exact from you. It would be unconstitutional. But a United States citizen has agreed to Title 42, Section 1981, that his right is to be extorted from. So I'm sorry, folks, but that's what you've agreed to as a U.S. citizen.
Right.
You can't really deny it. It's right in the law. And they love the fact that you don't know the law. They love the fact there's no requirement for you to know the law, because the second you act in citizenship, the second you use the benefits that are given to you, the rights and benefits and all that stuff that's given to you as a United States citizen, you're assumed to know be responsible to know the law. It doesn't matter if you know it or not. They don't care. Maxim of law says that to know the law and to act under it are the same thing. It's your fault for not. Ignorance is no excuse. You should know
exactly.
That by now.
Exactly. Hey, we do have some more callers. Let's take Mike in Kentucky. Mike?
Yeah, there's a few key things that can totally take apart the doctrine of the church, and some of it may be disinformation, but it's hard to reconcile. And what you're talking about there with the Constitution, I think, and the previous caller, it was a great advantage to, you know, convince Americans that they could run out and drive a stake in the ground or get their 40 acres and a mule and conquer this land. Under the idea that they could own it. I think it was a false sense of ownership that gave the enthusiasm to run out and conquer the continent. It was a lot cheaper to do that than it was to pay, you know, mercenary Hessians or whatever. I think that's one of the reasons why the revolution was fairly successful, is mercenaries just aren't quite so enthusiastic as people that are being invaded to protect what they've got. But the as I understand it, it was a political deal with Jimmy Carter's administration to give the church back its corporation ability to own property. And if you look in any of the church doctrine, before 1979, none of the publications that the church put out are considered church doctrine because it doesn't have the stamp of the article of the presidency. The prophet is automatically the president of the corporation. And so everything since the corporation was established or reestablished now can be considered church doctrine. So they're off the hook for all these other publications that go all the way back that are inaccurate, that show the Western progression of the saints was not straight west, you know. They had a little backtrack problem here and there. And the reason I understand that they lost their ability to hold property way back in the 1870s.
Well, that was temporary.
Well, the state of Utah, or the territory of Utah, was not going to be allowed to be a state because it was a theocracy. Theocracy. So they had to abandon polygamy, and in order to, as part of the deal for the Utah territory to become a state of union. That's the order of events that I've studied and found that I had to produce a half hour documentary, and the only thing that I had been studying enough to fill that much time was this, the church back in 1989 or something. I had to produce a video production that was a half an hour, and so that.
Well, one of the things I came to understand is why religions, which incorporate, whether it's nonprofit 501c3, whether it's something like the Pope or the Church of England, which are, you know, the Queen and the President of the Church stands in a corporation. So whatever it is, you know, the idea of religious law is that it's higher always than legal law. And we're talking about the natural law, essentially. And so anytime you see that a church is a corporation under the state, anytime the state can tell a church what to do, you know it's not actually a religion. You know it's actually not a church. You know it's not following the law of God or the law of nature, because the whole purpose of being quote-unquote Jewish or quote-unquote Christian in the real sense of those words is to be above the law, is to never have to be or submit yourself to anything in the legal or artificial realm. So all churches, all corporations that call themselves a church, it's just a word, church means people, you are false. They're all artificial persons. They're all corporations. Right. And the Bible is very explicit, never to respect any person of man, any artificial person. So the whole concept of religion is to follow a law, which is the Bible, or whatever your law is. And the Bible is a law book. It's not a religion. You're following the law that is set out in the Bible. If you're not following that, well, then you're going to be under the legal gods, the legal rulers who instruct you on what you can and can't do. But a real church or a real monastery that would be a sanctuary, which means to be immune from the sanctions or punishments of law, that's a whole different story. That's why I'm so interested in the monastery concept, because people have no place to go. The land is spoken for. We've been robbed of it, so there's nowhere to actually stand in reality anymore. So the idea of a monastery being a sanctuary from law where people can go to reestablish themselves under the religious law, which is the moral law, which is higher than, and admittedly so, the legal law in any government, that is the purpose. So you know all churches are fake, false, have nothing to do with the Bible. They just use the Bible as furniture, just as any Masonic lodge uses either the Talmud, the Quran, or the Bible as their quote-unquote furniture to decorate the lodge, and they call it their sacred book.
You know, the churches don't actually have to qualify for a 501c3. Churches are tax exempt as they stand. The only reason that they file, I don't know, so that they can be a corporation, apparently.
Because they want personhood.
The members can donate and get a tax deduction. Barely they will receive their reward. The tax deduction is their reward. But the churches want the ability to own property, to set up foundations, and that is a government-granted privilege. So they go beyond just being a church. They set up foundations so they can invest and hold properties, and that's what the Mormon Church did. They got their corporation of the presidency established in 1979, I think, or somewhere in there.
No, they lost lost it. They lost it for just temporarily. It's been they got incorporated in 1923.
Now, Deanna, I did hear rumors.
Did you?
I did hear rumors that at that point the Rothschilds came in and bought it all up, but I don't know how true that is.
Yeah, I don't know that. I read that too.
There's all kinds of rumors, and a lot of rumors are put out by the church using Deseret Publishing, which none of that stuff has the stamp of the Corporation of the Presidency, so they have plausible deniability. And a lot of their members will write stuff, and it gets published, but it's not considered church doctrine. So there's all kinds of just out there stuff that's published by Deseret Books, and a lot of people think
which is owned by the church.
Right, it's another corporation. It's another holding. Yeah. They owned PepsiCo for a long time, I think. Like all the Pepsi products were put out by the church, and that's why we had all the decaffeinated soda pop came on the market, because they considered caffeine and chocolate and stuff to be a bad thing.
Yeah, tannins.
But the word of wisdom, you were mentioning in 1971 or something that the Kimball had reiterated this thing that they shouldn't use tea and coffee and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was very expensive in the out west for them to bring all that stuff out there to Utah and stuff. So,
talking 1971, not 1871.
Well, hey, the word of wisdom was written way back. It's part of, I think, in the Doctrine of Covenants, inspired writings of Joseph Smith. But that goes way back, the banning of coffee and tea. And
of course, he drank and smoked all the time after he produced that so-called revelation. In fact, he was drinking on the day that he was murdered. And he wasn't really murdered. I mean, he shot at three people, killed two. He wasn't a martyr. I mean, he had a gun up there, and they were drinking wine and all kinds of stuff. So
in the jail?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I had never read that he actually was. I thought he was in jail for some other reason, you know.
He was.
He smashed up a printing press or something.
Yes, the Nauvoo Expositor.
Yeah, there was no.
That reminds me. You know, we had two newspapers in this town, the Deseret and one other. Salt Lake Tribune, and the Deseret would be, like you said, the one that printed the sort of stories that were sometimes anti-Mormon or sometimes what you would consider as neutral, but you knew that they were both owned by the church, right? And recently there was a huge controversy where they actually merged, they closed down the Deseret paper, and now we only have the Salt Lake Tribune, which, you know, of course is... completely controlled, so we don't even have two propaganda machines, just one now.
Wow.
Well, of course, Joseph Smith was killed in Illinois, I think, as they got ran out of Missouri. They were trying to establish their new Zion in Missouri and got ran out of Missouri, I think, and had to backtrack. And that gets edited out, or it did for a long time. It got edited out of the Mormon publications, and they couldn't deny it anymore. I think in the 1980s, after they got their corporation, they had to recognize that there was this progression west. You know, that was part of the legend, is that they progressed west. And there's all these early publications.
They did. I mean, there was a split after Joseph Smith and Hiram Smith died. Then Brigham Young, well, there was a lot of people trying to take over the leadership of the church, and Brigham Young then took everybody out west, or most everybody out west. But
and you mentioned the family there. If you look at the witnesses for the Golden Plates, all of them are family except for two, and look at their middle names.
Yeah.
They're all
related, and they never saw the Golden Plates.
The two that aren't related had the same middle name, but it was spelled different, and it's from the Masonic legends of Hiram, H-Y-R-A-M and H-I-R-A-M, yeah. Hiram. So, anyway, there's your connection back to Masonry.
Yeah.
The middle names of the two people that aren't related that claim to be witnesses.
Yeah.
I'll let you go, guys. There's a lot to know about.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Well, I don't think people realize how deep this goes. Truot I mean, he went so far as to uncover money laundering, gold counterfeiting, child abuse, and child trafficking. Trafficking in children between the, you know, the Mormon Church and other organizations. I mean, it's huge. This company is, corporation is huge. And, you know, again, the Joseph Smith, direct cousins with the presidents of the United States. I don't know, I can't stress how important that is. You know, this is a family affair, whether it's the church or the government. You know?
Sure. He had 34 wives, one of which was 14. Hey, let's take Wes in Idaho, if you're going to talk about child abuse. Let's take Wes in Idaho. Wes?
Yeah, Clint, has there ever been, and could there ever be, a government by and for the people?
Well, it is a government for the people. It's just that you're not the people.
Correct.
I mean, it is for the people and their posterity, but you've got to define who the people were that was for. And they define white persons and all that stuff. It's right in the preamble who this government is for, ourselves and our posterity. And I'm sorry, but that's not every man on earth, or every man on earth would be a citizen, you know, of the states. So obviously it's an exclusive bunch of people. And remember, the when you capitalize a word, and the words in the Constitution are capitalized for a reason, you find we the people being capitalized. Well, that means a caponym. That takes the general meaning of the word people and puts it to a specific meaning of a specific group of people.
All righty. We are going to a break. Thank you very much, Wes. We do have some more callers when we come back. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Our guest has been Clint Richardson, and we do have a couple more callers. Let's take William in California.
Well, how are y'all doing, Deanna?
Hi.
I know my wife and I, Hillary, we love your show. We love Clint, you know, but I wouldn't lie about it. Hi, Deanna.
Hi. What's your question?
Say, Clint was going to be in charge of security when he was running for president. You remember me, Clint?
I do.
Yeah, we never got together. I wanted to ask you a specific question. You had Patrick Jordan, I believe his name was, on your show one day.
Sure.
And he was talking about all wipes, hand conditioners, and things like that gave you dementia or the ingredients. Is that true?
I remember that the chemical ingredients in those hand wipes, which I avoid like the plague.
You too.
Right.
They take away the oil from your hands, and the oil is actually there to protect from it getting anything else into your pores. That's the most important part of it, because then, you know, you wipe your hands, you go touch things. But I think, some of the chemicals had something to do with that. I don't remember the full story there.
Yeah, it takes away the oil off the hands, and then the chemical enters your bloodstream and will give you Alzheimer's, dementia, or another disease called like Lubiloy or something.
Lupus?
No, not lupus. No, it's got the word like Lubiloy or Lubloy or something like that. It's another type of dementia. But I just wanted to say, and he was also saying about Purell, the hand cleaner. So you agree with all that? I mean, what do you say?
I would go farther, and I would say shampoos, soaps, anything that's designed to make you quote-unquote clean is actually robbing you of the essential oils and stuff that are on your skin that actually protects you. So, I'm not one, you know, I'll rinse off, but I don't often use soap like other people because I want to have that barrier of protection. Then anything you put on your skin, anything you touch, any chemicals you use, and you get on your skin without the oil is going to go right through because you don't have that protective, what people would call being dirty or unclean. Well, that's there for a purpose, man.
Yeah, but you can still stink if you don't get rid of the odor. You know, water doesn't get rid of the odor, though, man.
No, I'm not saying that. And you know, the advent of, I think, of perfumes and everything else is part of the integration process to where we don't actually, a big part of our attraction to each other is smell, smelling hormones and that sort of thing. So the addition of perfumes and things into all these shampoos, perfume is one of the most toxic things you can actually inhale, by the way. It's a 9 out of 9 on the toxicity scale. If you look that up, perfume in any ingredient is one of the most toxic things you can have, and that interferes with our ability to actually the senses to actually know whether we're compatible. Are you good? Are you bad? You know, it's an interesting trail to follow. Anyway, the smell thing, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Right, make your own. That's what I do. Hey, thanks a lot, Clint. It's been wonderful. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, callers, and thank you, RBN. Take care, listeners. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Clint.